Leanna Shields, and you're listening to The Cozy Sleuth. Today, Snoops and Sleuths, I have with me returning guest Kathleen Marple-Kalb, here to talk about her books, writing, and all things cozy once again. Kathleen, great to have you back. But for those new, why not introduce yourself?
Okay. My name's Kathleen Marple-Kalb. I write the Ella Shane mystery series, historical mystery set in Gilded Age New York, featuring a woman who sings trouser roles in opera and solves mysteries. And I also, as Nikki Knight, write the Vermont radio mysteries for Crooked Lane. The most recent one of those is Live, Local, and Dead, which came out last month. The new Ella Shane, which is what I'm here to talk about today, comes out on March 29th. And it's called, it's an April book, as Kensington considers it. And it's called A Fatal Overture. It's Ella's third adventure. And I think it's the best one yet. A lot of readers like it. Then she gets into all kinds of trouble with a marriage contract, a murder, at least one, and a potential mother-in-law. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler to tell you that the book opens with Ella's potential mother-in-law showing the Countess of Blyth showing up on her doorstep demanding why she hasn't agreed to marry her son.
Oh dear.
Yeah. With her two sisters, these three cute little old British ladies show up on Ella's doorstep and demand to know why Ella's been stringing the Duke along for two books.
Oh no.
and then the ladies go back to everybody has tea and it's all very nice. And then the ladies go back to the hotel and find a body in the bathtub.
Oh wow.
And then it gets interesting. So yeah.
Oh wow.
And then Ella and Gil, the Duke, are trying to work out a marriage contract so she can keep singing. Remember, this is 1900 in New York. And normally if you land yourself a Duke, you're going to stop doing whatever it is that's your job. And she wants to keep singing. So they spend much of the book fighting over a marriage contract. And then Ella finds out that somebody may be trying to kill Gil. And so she has to solve the whole cast. I mean, in an Ella book, everybody gets involved in the solution. They have to figure out who killed the guy in the bathtub and who's trying to kill Gil.
Oh, gee. And here I thought my poor main character had troubles with her wedding.
Well, they haven't even gotten to the, I mean, this is not the wedding episode. This is just, are they going to end up, this one will end either, I don't want to spoil anything, but either by the end of the book, they'll either be engaged or they'll have decided to go their separate ways. I mean, once you get to that, well, in 1899, 1900, once you decide that you are either going to marry or not marry, there's nowhere else to go after that.
So, well, yeah, of course.
You know, we'll be friends with benefits is not an option. So.
So it gets interesting. That just sounds great.
It's fun because much of the book is devoted to them. Obviously there's a very strong murder mystery component, and there's two things going on here. One is the whole issue of what happens to young, vulnerable women in service, because the guy who is dead was a predator. It was the predatory son of the hotel owners. And he was sexually harassing the maids, or worse. And so everybody assumes that what he was doing to the maids had something to do with his death, but nobody's sure exactly how. And so there's that whole theme of, you know, poor, downtrodden, abused girls. And Hetty, Ella's friend, the reporter, is involved in that part of the theme. And then there's the other, you've got this woman who is very powerful and can set her own terms for how she's going to be with her man. And so it's a nice contrast.
Oh, so in what ways would you say your characters have grown since their last two books?
They've grown a lot. Ella started out as just, you know, she and her cousin Tommy got out of the tenements and they're having a blast in their exciting, rich, interesting life. They have lots of money and they've done all, you know, they're taking care of everybody, but they have lots of money and can do fun things with their money. And, you know, so Ella was just having a great time and didn't want to settle down and didn't want to, you know, be very serious about anything. And then she meets Gil and decides that maybe she does want a man around. But Gil has to figure out how he's going to be good for her. And a lot of this, the growth in the series actually is him learning how to be a better man for her. Not in terms of, you know, the guy's, if the man's journey is more important than the woman's, it's obviously not set up that way. But in, but he has to figure out how to be better for her instead of her just going, oh, you know, the Duke wants me, everything's okay. No, it's not. The Duke wants you, and now the Duke's going to have to do the work. And he, over the course of the books, realizes that he has to show respect for her job and that he has to try to understand what she's been through to get here, which is an entirely different experience than he had in life, and kind of understand what life is like for women in his time period and how that affects her and what he can do to make her life better. And each book we deal with some aspect of that. So each book he learns something about being a better guy. So, and has to work harder, which I think is fair, because in most of these, it totally upends the romance trope, because usually in your classic Regency romance, once the Duke offers, the answer is, oh yes, please. I don't care what kind of a jerk you are. Come to me. No, thanks.
I really do not see Ella standing for that.
No. And that's the other thing that's great about Ella. Ella's pretty much, I wouldn't say she's practically perfect as she is, but she's pretty terrific and she knows it. And she's unapologetically good at her job. And she knows where her flaws are and works on them. She tries to be better in ways, you know, she tries to be less thoughtless and try to understand when something is a big deal to somebody else, but not her. But she's pretty good to start with and doesn't try to change herself for her man.
That's always good to have a character that, while yes, she's trying to improve because she knows her faults and everything,
yeah,
but it's not for
yeah
anyone and else I, other than her own growth.
Right. And I thought that was important because a lot of, you know, female characters tend to get watered down once they get into the romance side. You know, you see women, female characters making compromises like we sometimes do in real life, and you don't want them doing that if you can avoid it, because we all know how that turns out. People don't change unless there's a good reason for it. So I like that. The other journey that is really interesting to watch too is Ella's cousin, Tommy. He's a former boxer and currently the manager of her opera company. And I don't think I'm giving away any secrets when he's described as not the marrying kind. And that means exactly what you think it does. He's gay. We don't have out and proud in 1900. But he's definitely not a guy who's going to marry a woman. And he grows as Ella's friend. And in this third book, it's not a big plot point or anything, but he has a friend who he's close to. And it's not his best friend, the priest, who is, and that relationship is clearly not anything other than two really good friends. The new friend, Cabot, we're not sure, and we don't need to be sure, but they're definitely good friends. So
that's an interesting plot point.
It's not, you know, you don't have, if you weren't looking for it, if you didn't know, you wouldn't necessarily, it's not, you know, big obvious plot point, because in 1900, that was a big deal. But the people who know and are okay about it, and you just kind of see them just sort of quietly nodding and okay, you know, Tommy's hanging out with Cabot. That's good. We like that. So it's very subtle. But I was kind of glad to get that angle in there. So Tommy's happy too. At least he is for a while. Things get weird with Cabot, not because some things happen with him. Cabot draws trouble, is also part of the plot. Things happen to him, to Cabot, that spill over. And that creates other problems.
So, oh boy.
Yeah. And probably the person who has the most interesting ride this time is Hetty the reporter.
Oh
yeah, she starts out, because I know she's somebody that a lot of my friends who are reporters really like Hetty. A lot of my journalist friends love Hetty. She starts off doing an undercover expose as a maid at the hotel, and then confesses to the murder halfway through. And her motivation, yeah. And no one really thinks she did it, but no one's really sure how to get her out of it. And no one's sure how to shake her story or get, you know, her, how to protect her. And, you know, so they spend a fair amount of time trying to figure out what really happened and trying to clear Hetty and trying to help her and trying to figure out why she's such a complete bonehead and confessing to a murder she didn't commit. And there's a lot of stuff going on about in Hetty's life about who she is and what she is and how her career is going and how she feels like her life's at a dead end and driving her to do these things. And so we spend a lot of time on the motivations of somebody who's trying to establish a career like Hetty instead of Ella, who is established. And so there's a lot of interesting stuff to be had that, you know, modern readers would recognize. You know, a lot of us are at various stages of our careers and go and sometimes do not very bright things in order to perhaps just shake the tree and make something happen.
Oh boy, do I know that one.
Yeah,
kind of makes me think of when I first started my writing path. I signed up with this one publishing company. Oh, that was such a stupid mistake. But it was before I had known about things like Create Space and all that.
And the other thing is, and I think we all know this from having been around a while, the words, if you're not published yet, whether it's indie or traditional, if you don't have work in print yet and somebody offers to publish for you, that they have an unfair advantage in your perceptions and whether you're going to get anything done. Writers will do a lot to get in print.
Yeah.
And reputable people, professional people, responsible people understand that is out there. And then there are those people who like to exploit that. And that's not fair.
No.
So that's a big part of the writing journey, though, you know, because we always want to get our work in front of people. And we always come in with a willingness to put up with an awful lot to make that happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, a little bit too much willingness.
I think that's true. It unfortunately, it opens us up to some stuff that we'd rather not be involved in, whether it's doing more work than we should or sometimes getting scammed even. It's not cool.
Yeah, in my case, it was losing a lot of money for very little result.
Yeah, they're out there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one I'm sure that you're aware of, this website, it's called Writer Beware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Never hurts to put in a plug for them, just in case anybody who might be listening wants to check them out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is one piece of advice for those who want to write? Would it be to definitely check out things like Writer Beware or...
Oh, yeah. I think the first thing is you sit down and start for fun, because there is so much work involved in doing this thing that if the writing isn't fun, you shouldn't be doing it.
Absolutely. And also make sure you're writing about a topic that really, really interests you.
Right. You got to feel it.
Because goodness knows, if I was not interested in mythology like the way I am,
oh yeah,
I would not have done the research that I had to do my books.
And you nail it. I mean, you know who, you know, is what and where you deviate from the mythology. You do it for a purpose. You know, you tell your stories in a particular way because you want to do that, but you also know the underlying stuff that gave rise to that. When people are out there just randomly grabbing stuff, it shows and it looks awful. And it's usually isn't a good read.
Yeah. And I've watched you online. You know your stuff with the history behind your books, with Ella Shane's background and lifestyle. You know your stuff.
Well, I think you, and you definitely know, I love hanging out with you and your characters on Main Character Monday in Cozy Mystery Village. Yes, that was a promo alert. but Sabia and everyone, when they turn up, it's wonderful because you know these people. These people are real to you, and where they are in their life experience, you know right away. And I do the same with my characters. They're like my friends. I described this to somebody the other day who was talking about how they keep track of historical things, and they were whipping out charts and spreadsheets and all this stuff. And I do some of that. Timelines are important. You know, you got to know your timelines. But as far as, you know, what this character, when this character was born, I know when Ella was born. I know exactly what her experiences were, how she relates to certain things. I don't need a chart for that. I know that Ella and Tommy's good friend Preston is a Civil War veteran, and he was a drummer boy at Gettysburg. And that kind of, I mean, I know that stuff because these are people I know. And I'm sure it's the same for you and your characters.
Yeah, but my characters also like to keep secrets from me.
They're sneaky little weasels, aren't they?
I know. I got through like my second round of edits. All of a sudden, my main character, Bridger, decides to reveal he has a tattoo of Sabia's name on his stomach.
At least that... it's not a previous girlfriend.
Yeah, but the story behind it is much stranger that I definitely want to put in the book.
Oh!
Turns out that before he got into the army, his friends got him drunk, took him to a tattoo parlor, and told the tattoo artist, who happened to be a seer that could see the future, just told him, so tattoo cool. The name of the woman you see him being with.
That is so cool.
And he's ignored that tattoo like until he's met Sabia, where it's like, wait a minute.
That's wonderful. I love that.
And I know I'm gonna have Sabia sometime in the book when I get the edits back from my editor say, so why do you have your name on, or my name on your stomach?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's funny with the way things come to us, because I can't tell you what the twist is, but there's a twist at three quarters of the way through Overture. And I had somebody else entirely being the killer. And I had it entirely different and plan in my mind. And I woke up one night on the train yelling, that's it! Scared the heck out of everybody else on Metro North that night.
Oh, the visual.
Yes, you know, because I kind of, you know, I'm a suburban mom, and I'm kind of curled up in a little ball with my little bag, and you know, and then my Kindle, and I'm asleep, and all of a sudden I pop up and go, that's it. Suddenly I wasn't a cute suburban mom anymore. I was like, okay, crazy person. Okay, get away from her. Yeah. But you know, they do that. They trick us.
Oh, definitely. Again, with my third book, I thought I had the killer all planned out. Actually, in two different versions, I thought I had the killer planned out.
Right.
The one I'm on now. Oh no, this new killer in a drunken confession.
But it's good, because sometimes you figure out that you're going in completely the wrong direction, and it gets you. Because I'm thinking about a third Vermont book right now. I'm the second one, if it's ready to go if needed. So I'm thinking about a third one, and I suddenly realized that I like the idea of the kind of crime, but I have all of the wrong people doing all of the wrong things at the wrong time. And also I want a hurricane. So basically I'm back to the drawing board, because I'm driving, the main character in that one is a DJ. And so a lot of times I get ideas for the story when I'm listening to some cheesy love song on the radio, as I was on the way home from drop off yesterday. And it just hit me. We must have a hurricane. So we're going to have a hurricane. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, but I'm going to have a hurricane. So.
Oh, sounds like one of those situations where everyone's trapped in a hotel.
Yeah.
During a storm. And of course, the murder and...
Funny you should say that, because I actually have a story coming out in an anthology that the next week, March 22nd. I've got a story coming out in an anthology, which is about everybody being trapped at a New York radio station during a blizzard. Wonder where I got that idea. And as I should say here, none of the characters are directly inspired by people I know, but some of the ones that I like have some things about people I like in them. So, but it's something that I've been trapped in hotels during radio station and at the radio station during blizzards any number of times. I mean, it's something that happens to us at least once a winter. And I got that idea and turned it into a short story. So it was fun.
Oh, that is so much fun.
That one, if enough people read it, will cause me some trouble, because unlike the Vermont book, which is inspired by experiences that took place 20 years ago, and there's nobody that would remind you of anybody real. That one is based on stuff that happens at my work all the time.
Uh-oh.
And like I said, none of the characters are anything like anybody I know. Some of them borrow positive qualities from some of my friends, but that's about it. But people are going to read that one and go looking for themselves. They will not find themselves, but they will read it and look for themselves.
Though I know what you mean by taking from experiences in ways, because
yeah,
I have been so tempted to write cozy mysteries based at conferences or...
Have you ever read, this is the only book I know that is based at a conference that I know of, Die for Love by Elizabeth Peters?
No, I haven't.
It's, you know, Elizabeth Peters is usually you think of the historical books, the Amelia Peabody, but she wrote this two or three books featuring Jacqueline Kirby, who's a professor of some kind who writes romance novels. And Die for Love is set at a romance novelist convention. Honest to God, do not drink or eat while you are reading it. You will choke to death. It is the funniest thing.
Oh, another book added to my to-be-read list.
Yes, yeah. And for me, I read it when I was a kid, and I was thinking about what kind of writer I wanted to be, whatever. And it was the first time I read a funny mystery. And funny and smart, really funny, really smart, just knocked me out. And I was like, I want to do something like that someday. Really cool. So yeah, conferences are a wonderful thing, but that one you would appreciate because it takes place at a conference and it's, you know, funny as all get out too.
And I am going to have to read that because it sounds absolutely terrific.
It is. It really, and she, because it's a romance novelist conference, she plays with all of the, you know, romance stereotypes. And this was written, I think, at the height of that whole bodice ripper thing in the 80s, in the 1980s. And so there's like all these very funny references to some of the florid language that was used at the time. Very funny.
Oh. But I'm sure your books are terrific too. Just trying to get back to talking about you.
I'm snarky. I'm Ella is less snarky than Jay is, but I don't think it's any fun for the reader if you don't have a sense of humor. And both Ella and Jay, in different ways and for different reasons, have gotten through some tough times in their lives by laughing about it, by finding the comical thing, the funny thing. And so I think there's a very strong like sense of wry humor in my books. Ella a little bit less so, because she's a 19th century woman and less edgy than Jay. But Ella gets off good comments too at times. In A Fatal First Night, the second one, they're at this very over the top. It's what we would now recognize as a gym for ladies, a place that women go to do calisthenics. And it's decorated in like 18th century French, you know, they have the Watteau pictures, and everybody's referred to, you know, Madame, this will help you, and everything's pink. And it's like, you know, you're inside a cupcake. And Ella says, I didn't know what they were doing with the over the top 18th century femininity, but I sure hope they'd let me eat cake. you know, she's very, so she's got this very wry sense of humor about stuff when weird things happen. And Jay's just snarky. I think my favorite Jay line, and remember she's a DJ, is you wouldn't believe how many requests I get for faithfully and hard to say I'm sorry from people who were neither faithful nor sorry till they ended up alone that night. I tried that one out on some of my coworkers because it's a newsroom, it's a hard room, you know, and every single one of them laughed and I knew I had a winner. So
that is a great line.
Yeah, well, we do this in newsrooms, and I don't know if you try lines out on other writers sometimes too, maybe, you know, if you have writing buddies, but
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. In the newsroom, when we're writing headlines, we try them out on each other to make sure that they're as good as we think they are. It's a common thing. You know, somebody will, if nowadays, thankfully we're all out in a room together, but when we were all in our own studios, it would be, you'd hit the intercom and go, hey, what do you think of this headline? And, you know, so.
Sabia's sense of humor is more associated with like classic old movies.
Oh, that's great.
Like, there's a scene where she has to confront, it's not going to be her mother-in-law. It's Bridger's great grandmother.
Oh,
who's
she's
kind
the
of the matriarch,
right?
Of the family.
Yeah.
What?
She's the matriarch, the scary one. Yeah.
Yes. And after this woman vanishes away, Sabia goes like, don't let a house fall on you.
Yeah. Nice. It's perfect. Was she wearing red peppermint stick striped stockings at the time?
No, I didn't go that far.
It's good. It's very good.
I'm just sad I had to take out a reference from one of my favorite old movies, The Women, because the line was just too obscure for my editor.
Oh, you know, I'm too cute for the room sometimes too. Something that means something to me and maybe one other person, and then it gets, oh wait, I don't know what the heck you're talking about, chick. Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah. And I do that too. You sound like you're the same as me. You're a phrase collector. You remember turns of phrase.
Yes.
And sometimes I remember something that is just so good, but it takes so long to get there that it's not worth it.
Yeah. And having Sabia use the phrase, let's see, the line I had in the book was, I didn't know people in high society used that word outside of a kennel towards someone.
Uh-huh.
And yeah,
I think that's great, but that's perfect. But yeah, I can see how that would be a little tough for somebody to get. It was a little, if it was a little inside baseball to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of Sabia's sense of humor. If it can relate to an old movie, yeah, it creates a good line for her.
I don't know about you, but I like slapstick, a little bit of slapstick too.
Oh yeah.
You know, goofy. This is something that I think this is also from working in a newsroom, and you know, it's a very, we deal with very serious, very dark stuff a lot of the time. And something just stupidly funny will send us into gales of laughter. And so I love to be able to supply something that I hope will do the same thing for somebody reading it. Like my farting moose.
Oh yes.
The moose in Live, Local and Dead. And the moose is two things. He's kind of a totemic character. He comes out and he's sort of Jay's friend, and he comes out and he eats candy from her hand. And the other thing that he does is he has a flatulence problem, which if you know anything about moose, which are basically, as another character describes them, giant cows with antlers, there's no surprise here. But it's very funny when he does.
Oh, that is hilarious.
You know, I don't, it's not magical realism. You know, the animals don't have any special gifts that they couldn't have in real life. But it walks right up to the line, I admit it.
Oh, I'm so gonna have to read that book. Again, another one on the to be read pile. It is
Yeah.
going, that thing is growing and growing
Well,
and growing.
mine too. Mine too. Every day I go online and I see more stuff I need to read. Yeah.
Oh, online, especially in our writers group,
Yes.
is
Yes.
so dangerous.
It is. And February just about ruined me because I was on a group. We did it on a Twitter group. We were promoting each other's work. And you know how that goes.
Oh,
You
yes.
start talking up somebody else's book and you go, ooh, that looks good. Even if you know you just you're just being friends, you're just supporting a fellow writer, and then all of a sudden you find yourself going, I want one. I
Try
need to read
having
that
this
series.
show.
Oh my gosh, I bet. That must be, yeah.
Every single author I talk to, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get this book. I've got to get this book. Oh, it's a good thing I have
Happens.
barely any money or I'd be broke.
I keep my library busy. I really do. And it's like I go to the Sisters in Crime meeting once a month, and somebody starts talking about their next book, and I'm like, oh God, here we go. Off to the reserve list. Put it on Jordan now.
Like, okay, Amazon's gonna be busy.
Well, yeah, and there are some things you can only get on Amazon, and so yeah, you have to. But yeah,
Oh,
it is
yeah.
always dangerous when writers get together.
Oh, so dangerous. Either ideas that it's like, oh, I wonder if I could sneak that.
Yeah,
Not that I've done that.
well, that's the other thing, though. Somebody it says something to you that is not, you're not stealing an idea. They just inspire you to move in a different direction because, oh, she could do that. She did that. That was cool. I wonder if I could do this. You
Yeah.
know, there's always that, well, if she can get away with this, maybe I can get away with that.
With me, sometimes it's like, okay, did I push the boundary too far? Like on a new project I'm wanting to work on, the main character is a space alien.
Like that. I liked it. She did very nicely on Main Character Monday. She was fun. I liked her.
I love her, and it's actually helping me get to know. Okay, I get together with a group of friends on Roll 20 and we play a game called Starfinder. It's one of those Dungeons and Dragons kind of a
Yeah,
game.
role-playing games, sure.
Yeah. Well, my character is named Kima Anal. Yes, like my character. But the differences between my character, Kima, and the one on my game is that the one in my game, let's see, she was a dream painter before circumstances turned her into an outlaw.
Wow.
And now she's working with this group of others that are trying to, basically, they're like police in ways, from what I understand. But anyway, from what I started this story, the mystery was supposed to get to know my role-playing character a little bit better. Yeah, that didn't work. Because we know how our characters are.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but I do like a project that is outrageous, and that is something I'm noodling on sometimes when I'm stressed and I'm trying to figure out what the next thing is going to be. And sometimes that turns into something that's actually worth doing, because I also have on my computer one that now that I think The Princess Diaries, only with a 40 something mom as the main character. And she has to figure out who killed the previous person.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, you know, she's coming home one day from work with the giant, with the from school pickup and the trip to Costco with the giant with the toilet paper and the box of wine and all that, and there's a limo in her driveway, and congratulations, and you didn't win Publishers Clearing House. I think there could be a lot of fun with that, but there's a lot of stuff in the air with that, and it's going to take up a lot of oxygen to get there. So doing it as a mystery is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to make sure you get that, you get it all there. So that one's going to require a lot of energy. At this point, it's just a couple of chapters, but I can
Yeah.
see. I like to play. I mean, I like to play around, write something and see how it feels, and then decide if I'm going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that 100%, where it's like, okay, I've got these characters in line that need to kind of have a story told, I'll play with it a little bit.
Yeah. Or you have like a piece that is great and you want to use it and you can't figure out how. I've got a short story opening in my head that I want to use. And so far I can't figure out which characters to use it with. And, you know, when it comes together, it'll be done in a day, but it doesn't come together yet. So
it's yeah.
Just twirling in the background somewhere.
Those ever elusive, oh, good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I don't know about you, but I get stuck on the first sentence. I get stuck on the opening. If I can't open it, then I wonder if I actually have a good idea.
Oh my gosh. There is nothing more intimidating than the blank screen or yeah. the blank piece of paper or however yeah. you write.
Right. I mean, I don't wake up and say on a given morning and say, I am now going to write an Ella Shane short story today. That's not really how I work. But I think, gee, I'd like to do a story about X. And then I realize that the thing that happens is, you know, three paragraphs in and I have no idea how to do the first paragraph, which makes me wonder what the hell I'm doing, what on earth I'm doing here, you know? So.
Yeah, I know that one all too well. I've got like three untitled documents that have these random little scenes in it that probably would yeah. be good.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, and you possible. Just end up, oops.
I'm sorry.
No. No, my fault. This is why we edit.
Yeah, exactly. But it's process. You know, that's part of the process. You work, it evolves for you or it doesn't. And, you know, you save the idea for some other time and maybe it'll be useful later. You know, that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe it's already been a half hour. Over a half hour.
You know, you put us together and we just talk all day. That's fine.
Oh, I know.
I'm good with that. I love this is one of my favorite podcasts. I love this. I love coming to talk to you.
I'm so glad. I love that people are loving and really responding to the podcast and yes. love being on it.
Well, it's just you're such a comfortable host. It's just, you know, we can just relax and talk. It's great.
And that is so funny. I always feel surprised that people say that I'm comfortable as a host, because I know myself where it's like, if you met me in person, I am quite possibly the shyest person you will ever meet in person.
Maybe not, because I am terrified of people. I really am. There's a reason I'm in radio and not television or not do public speaking. People scare me. All those eyeballs. And so I am the person at a big gathering in the corner with a glass of wine going, okay, who are you all? Leave me alone. I'm scared of everybody. So it's a thing, you know? But I suspect, based on my own experience, that because you feel that way, you make it more comfortable for others.
Yeah, that's what I do try and do, because
you get it.
Yeah, I absolutely get it, where it's like, and for people who come on the show, I get how nerve-wracking it is when it's your first time on radio or whatever.
Oh yeah, well, but it's nerve-wracking anytime. I'm not ashamed to admit that every time I open the mic, I feel a little twist in my gut. It means I respect what I'm doing. That's okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I did my first interview, my hand was shaking while I held the telephone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot my own name the first time I went on the air as a professional. I'd done it in college and I'd done some overnight stuff, some overnight jock. I'd have been an overnight jock. But my first real serious newscast as a grown-up professional newscaster in Springfield, Vermont, the little sounder went off. Da, 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 da. 3 seconds of silence while I tried to remember my name.
Oh.
It's funny now, but it also, it's a really good reminder that it keeps me honest. You know, you really are casting yourself into the void and you really need to respect it. You can't let the fear rule you, but you need to respect it.
Right. Which is why I love making my guests feel comfortable.
Yes. And you're very good at it.
Oh. Okay, now we're at nearly 40 minutes, and that's just okay. Great.
Okay, so yes, we've had so yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for coming on again. And I always love it when you come on. Always have such a blast.
Yes, we absolutely do.
Well, Snoops and Sleuths, you've heard another great interview here on The Cozy Sleuth. Though really, this was more like just listening to a great chat. I'd like to thank my patrons, Regina, Cozy Cub, and Dour Bear, and Patty Paul, for their contributions in keeping the show commercial-free and growing. I'd like to thank my Coffee Klatch for their contributions as well. If you'd like to be like Regina and have your name mentioned on the air, join me at my Patreon page at patreon.com/thecozysleuth, or join me at my Coffee Klatch at coffee.com/thecozysleuth. Also, if you'd like to hear some cozies read by live actors, check out The Cozy Mystery Rat's Maze, wherever you find your favorite podcast. Until next time, this is Leanna Shields saying, keep cozy.